This is the Winning Plays Podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the NBA's winningest franchise.
Winning Plays is back after a historic Game 7 for Jason Tatum and the Celtics, who are headed to the Eastern Conference Finals after blowing away Joel Embiid and the Sixers in the second half on Sunday afternoon in front of a very loud TD Garden. My name is Brian Robb. I'm joined for this exposition by Ryan Bernardoni. Follow him on Twitter at DangerCart. This episode of the Winning Plays Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. Head on over to FanDuel.com/Boston to get your first no-sweat first bet. And Ryan, I'm going to take you a little bit behind the scenes here at the TD Garden to start Game 7. I was heading to my seat just before tip, walking through the back tunnels there, and I ran into a former Celtic heading to an active NBA player, heading to their seats with their kid. Do you want to guess who that person was?
Daniel Theis. Was it Daniel Theis?
Because it was Daniel Theis
on the TV. So
yeah. Yes, I know they showed him, but I knew it was a good sign for the Celtics.
When players teams are coming to support the Celtics.
When players from other teams are coming back to support after that team traded you twice, that's I think that's a sign of a tight team, a good team. And that team showed up today for about the final 36 minutes of the game, I would say. But really put together a performance of the ages. We have to start with Tatum here. I'll throw it to you. What stood out to you most about just what that kind of domination was, in particularly in that third quarter?
I don't even know where you start with it, really. We can't say that we're surprised, I guess. I mean, we've seen him have amazing performances before. Obviously, this sort of stands with the 46-point game six at a similar stage last year. But he has, you know, he had 50 against the unbeatable Nets team when they beat them in that, you know, that hopeless series. He's a remarkably good playoff performer, particularly, you know, for any age, but particularly at his age. And I kind of have a feeling to this game, like throughout the series, there have been points where I didn't have a great feel for this series, but you know, game two, I think everybody was like, we're going to win this game. Game four, game five, I did not feel particularly great about it. But coming into this game after the way he closed game six, it was just like, no, he found it. He feels like such a confidence player, which is weird for somebody with the skill that he has, that he feels streaky in a way. But, you know, we've seen him have just kind of lose the jump shot and things like that at times. And to see the way he closed that game and the little press thing after with his, you know, humbly, I'm one of the best basketball players in the world. I just had a feeling coming into this game that I didn't have a feeling it was going to be 51 on 75% true shooting. And in one of the, you know, the fourth 50, 10, 5 game in playoff history, the highest scoring game in game seven history, all that. I didn't, obviously, you know, you don't come in expecting anything at that level, but I came into this game being like, we're going to see something here. And whether or not it would be enough to win the game, you know, you don't know that going in, but I was pretty confident from him that we would see something. And what we saw was even better than that. It, you know, one of the all-time great playoff games that anybody has had. And I, you know, I said it after he has now two real like Pantheon playoff games at 25 years old and two of the great Celtic games, which is saying something for this franchise. And it just right from the start, you know, 25 in the first half, 26 in the second, right? Like it was consistently just machine, amazing performance.
And he was the only one who showed up at first for them.
Like, I know you said a minute ago that the first 12 minutes, I thought they were sort of edgy at the beginning and a little sloppy, but that they were actually doing good things. It's just like they were sort of offsetting them with like, hey, now I'm going to throw this pass directly to James Harden. Or like I felt like they were a little nervous energy sort of bad things, but good intent in the first quarter.
The intensity was there, but like the... I thought the offensive flow outside of Tatum was garbage.
Well, they didn't. Yeah, I mean, they only took five threes in the first 11 minutes of the game or something. I think Missoula alluded to that afterwards.
Yeah, you want to bet he talked about that?
But it was like they were really, it felt to me like they were trying too hard almost, right? It was like that sort of nervousness of like, we are going to go to the hoop because that's what you do in game seven. And it was all good intent, if even if it wasn't like the perfect process and all that. And once that all settled down and things clicked in, you were like, okay, obviously, you know, it got better in the second quarter and then that unbelievable historic third quarter. But we probably shouldn't wander off of Tatum quite so quickly. I don't know. It must have been fun to be there. I wish I was in the arena tonight more than in a while, just to see what that was all about.
Yeah, no, this was like a finals type energy for the crowd, and the everyone saw Jaylen Brown calling them out after game five, and they brought it from Jump Street tonight, and the players talked about after the game whether it was Jaylen or Tatum or Smart. I mean, they all pretty much gave it up for that, because that energy was there and it was useful early. And then, things going awry. PJ Tucker was hitting threes and they got down by 9 at one point early in the second quarter. And then James Harden's elbow landed, turned a fast break layup into 4 points for the Celtics. And it all fell apart for there for the Sixers. And I think, to your point, I think the process was right early on, like the execution wise defensively was fine the whole game, and I think they made the one adjustment they needed to, and saying, okay, we're probably gonna have to close out on PJ Tucker in the corner now because he hit three in the first quarter. They did that. No one else in the Sixers was able to hit anything, and that essentially ended the game once Tatum started hitting his threes and everyone else on the Celtics offense woke up. But it was the Tatum part of it, for both getting to the line, this just the all-around part of his game, like you highlighted, right? Like the 13 rebounds, 5 assists, he led the Celtics in pretty much everything tonight. So it wasn't just like a historic scoring performance. It was as good as an all-around performance as you'll probably see in the NBA this year, period, like regular season or playoffs.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, complete tour de force to have that happen in a game seven against one of your big rivals. Break the record for game seven scoring only 2 weeks after it was most recently set. It was just an everything. Right from the start, like he goes, and there are some real like highlight reel moves in there too. You almost sort of, you see these like Kevin Durant or Booker have had these big scoring performances before they were eliminated, where it's just like jumper, jumper, jumper. It's like, almost robotic the way that they do it. And the way that he was scoring tonight, I don't even know what that move was that he dropped in the first quarter that led to the dunk, where he just it was Embiid, right? He just like dusts him.
Yep.
The spin that he scores off of Tobias Harris.
That one was, I think, the most impressive one. Like the spin
the one where he just leaves Embiid for the dunk. I don't even know what that move is called. And then there were a couple of threes in the second half where he just sort of, one of them over Embiid from the top of the key again, where he just like hangs him out to dry and hits it over him. He again hit from the same corner that got him going at the end of game six. There are just some shots in there that you're like, boy, there's five people in the world who can make that shot. So it's really like an impressive watch, even for, just looking back at the highlight reel of it. Where you can pick out plays and say, amongst all of this, there's also these plays that will be on his career highlight reel, not because they happened to get him to the 50 points, but because it was just like a random phenomenal play in the middle of this game. In the first half, it was all needed, just to get them to halftime with the 3-point lead. And then, I guess we should talk about the third quarter as maybe the next topic. Unless you want to jump around to other players. Like, I think that some of the other players will get kind of lost in this because of what Tatum did, but I don't know if you want to go to any other players.
Yeah, I mean, let's go to the third quarter, I think, run. Organically. I mean, right. I mean, it was just, what was it, 28-3 was the biggest?
I mean, like, it's 33-5 is the thing. Like, 28-3 is because Patriots 28-3. I don't know. Like, that sort of is where I think people are landing on it. But Harris hits the first shot, hits the three coming out, and they hit, and then I think gets two free throws at the end of the I don't know if it was he or Maxi. Somebody hits two free throws to close it. And it's 33-5 in between.
Good God.
And it felt like an avalanche.
And during that run, I mean, Tatum, the hunting on Embiid, immediately from the start of that being like, okay, this guy's already gassed. Let me just get that switch and I'm going to get whatever I want when the three is falling in. That's one. But defensively, with this group, back with the double bigs, the long lost double bigs, I don't know what Rob Williams plus minus was in the last two games offhand, but I imagine it was like plus 40 at least when those guys finally got a chance together. And this was the question, obviously, was do they still have this? So like the regular season numbers with this starting five were very underwhelming. And it's easy to forget that the playoffs, I guess, are obviously a very much a different animal. And when this group locked in, when Tatum, I think, really locked in defensively during that stretch too, when he was forcing turnovers, when he was just providing great help, and everyone was just at their best at that point. And then they were getting out in that transition, and that was the game. The game was over by what, like the 7 minute mark, the 6 minute mark of the third quarter. Once that run started, it was like the Sixers had no one stepping up to the table just to even put up a fight at that point.
Yeah, Rob, Amir plus 37 over those two games. When we talked about before game six about where you would go, and I was like, I don't even really know. I mean, like Sam Hauser, where are you going? Are you going to lean into the offense? I did not think that Rob Williams had the level of athletic burst that he showed at the beginning of game six right now.
No.
He hasn't shown it really. I mean, there have been little flashes. There were a couple of games along the way where you were like, is Rob back? Like, is this the Rob we've been waiting for? Is this pre-injury Rob? And it just felt like it was an open question whether or not he would ever get back to that level that he had at the, in sort of middle of last season. And he opened up game six and just looked every bit like that player again. And he didn't really sustain it for the rest of the game. But that's also sort of the Rob of old, where it's these like bursts of 8 minutes where you're like, oh my God, what am I watching here? It's not 48 minutes of that. It's never been 48 minutes of that, but it's the way that he forces players to react to him and to adjust what they're doing just by the mere threat of that. Lord, I remember what he did in the first quarter. Oh my God, what are we going to do? And so I didn't even like consider that as a serious option, because I didn't think that Missoula would go that way, and credit to him and,
credit to the players for forcing him to do it.
That choice, and the players, and whether or not there was front office pressure. I mean, everybody's got their own theories about what it is.
I think it was a bit of everything. I think
maybe, but in the end, it's his call, right? Like it's his lineup.
No, it's true.
And so he gets the credit for that. But the reason I didn't even like consider that is because I just didn't think that Rob had it in him, and he has had such a difficult time with Embiid, even when he was under, in sort of better condition, and to be able to bring that out, like, it's a real game changer for this team for the rest of the way as well, just to survive the series, but also going forward and having to face, them and how you deal with all the challenges that the Heat bring. So if he can play that way, even if it's, 25 minutes a night, 30 minutes a night, whatever, and if particularly if Tatum sort of finds his jump shot and goes on a heater for a couple of weeks here, then this team can they look like the team that they looked like last year when they were just dominating everybody? We'll have to see. But it saved the season at a point where it could have gotten ugly. And then, yeah, like you said, in that third quarter, it's just a barrage of everything. And they had no answers. Like we said, 33-5, it's the lowest scoring quarter in game seven history. They only scored 10 points in the entire quarter.
Oof.
I think it's the highest point differential, 20 plus 23, maybe in any quarter in game seven history. And like I said, they scored the first 3 points in the last 2 points of that quarter. So I will always remember it, I think, as 33-5, even though I suspect that 28 will be how it's remembered. And it just, I mean, it happens so fast, and you're a couple minutes into it and you're like, okay, it's suddenly a 14 point lead. Oh no, it's 17, 22, 20, and the game's gone. Like you said, middle of third quarter, it apparently is over. And from there, they don't get to garbage time until the very end. And even then, they've got Jaylen out there trying to get his applause and all that kind of stuff. And it was a little bit of an odd way, but you don't expect the fourth quarter of a game seven to be a processional. And that's what it turned into.
Just nuts. It's absolutely nuts. You mentioned Jaylen. I thought he had a sneaky, real nice game here. Efficient 25 points, 9-19 shooting. filled up the defensive stat sheet, a couple blocks, a couple steals. And I don't know, I feel like when we talk about the defense here with Rob, it's like the story, I think the biggest story of this series now, beyond just the switch, is like the defensive level they got to in these last two games. Like they should have, I mean, game six, I mean, Jason Tatum admitted it. They had him on the ropes in game six. The offense fell off a cliff there for pretty much the middle two quarters in the first half of the fourth quarter, where it was there for the taking for the Sixers. And the Celtics defense kept him in that game. They kept him in that game, this game early in the first quarter tonight when things were just going right offensively beyond Tatum. And now in these last two games, you hold the Sixers to, you know, like what, 92 points per 100 possessions in these two games, essentially. So against a pretty impressive offensive juggernaut when everyone's right on that team. So to be able to see this team get to that level, which they weren't able to do pretty much throughout the entire postseason run at this point, outside of maybe what, game one against the Hawks, like that's a really big deal against a Miami team that on paper is going to be a lot easier to defend than this team.
Yeah, so you can look at the series and say that there were three must-win games, right? They had to win 2, 6, and 7. And you always would like to win 5 when it's a 2-2, but that wasn't a must-win in the same, you know, it didn't feel the same way. So 2, 6, and 7. 76ers this year, two lowest scoring games were 85 and 88, both back in early in the season in October and November. And in those three games that the Celtics had to win, they give up 86, 87, and 88 points. Now you can look at that and say three-point shooting variance, a lot of stuff goes into that. Can you, you know, can a team hold an opponent to their season low every, you know, whenever they really need to? No, if they played 100 games that were all must wins, they would not hold them under 90 points every single time. But the reality of what happened is that the three times they needed it, they just didn't let them score. And in one of those games, they couldn't score themselves for most of the game and only pulled away. But even in the game, you look at it and it's a double-digit win, except that Jaden Springer hits a garbage-time shot with 30 seconds to go. But the Celtics win.
Well,
you know,
they were giving that game out of the refs, Ryan. Don't forget about that.
Yeah, of course. You know, but you get my point. Like, even with all that goes on in that game, the last minute of the game is the deep bench that's in it. It's not... The game did not go down to the wire. They're not literally, they're up double digits with a minute to go. And yeah, I agree that that's a very big part of the story of this series, is that when they needed it, like when this team, who make things difficult on themselves, but boy, they're hard to knock out. Like they, you know, they put themselves in some weird spots, but they're experienced in this and they are really hard to beat when it, you know, when it matters. And that's a big part of it, is that they just could, in this series anyway, say, yeah, we're just not going to let you score. and it worked. And like I said, you know, they shot under 30% from three in all three of those games. I think they shot 38% and then 40% in the other three. So some of it is just like, it's like shooting variance. But you watch the level of effort and the way that they defended Embiid, and the way that they, you know, a big part of how they've defended him over the years is the way that they're able to turn him over with Smart and Brown and help defenders coming from all different sort of angles, and the effort and the level of precision that that sort of defense takes was there in the games when they needed it. And yeah, if they can carry that forward into the next series against a team that has not had a great offense this year by any means, it, you know, that feels like the foundation of how they will approach that next challenge. I would like to talk a little bit. Yeah. I mean, the other thing, I know I'm bouncing back and forth on Jaylen. The one thing I would add into there is also really good energy game from him. Sort of a leadership game. And again, obviously Tatum will get all the plaudits and the headlines here, but everything from the play that you mentioned, back in position and takes the forearm to the face that turns into the flipped around, instead of 2 points for the 76ers, it ends up being the flagrant and 4 points for the Celtics. Going after the bench when Niang, who clearly should have been ejected from the game, grabs him, and then
just absolutely wild.
Becomes double technicals for turning around when somebody who's not in the game grabs you. Like, that's an, but you know, he's standing up there and showing the energy. And there were a couple other plays where I thought going for loose ball, there's a loose ball very early in the game where he beats two 76ers to the ball and turns it into a layup. When, like I said, the intent and the energy seemed really good, even if some of the process stuff wasn't great. And I really thought that his energy throughout the game and in intensity was really important, particularly in the first half. And then again, in the second half, things just get going and it all runs away. And some of that stuff doesn't matter as much, but when it did matter, I thought he was really there, sort of in a role that we might normally think of as like Smart playing that role of that sort of energy leader. I thought Jalen did a really nice job with that.
8 turnovers for the whole team in that game. And that's part of it. Like you said, Jalen playing with energy, but also Jalen playing smart. There were beyond just getting picked off at the start of, you know, the game and maybe one or two other plays in the first half. There weren't any plays like, what are they doing? Whether it was like dumb fouls or dumb passes, you know, maybe some ill-advised drives at Embiid, but that's just part of that. That's just going to happen naturally because he's just a monster down there, but only 2 blocks for him. Sixers had a ton of blocks early, but that obviously faded away in a hurry in the second half. And I don't know, before we wrap up on the Sixers and go to a quick first look at the Heat series, we haven't really mentioned Horford at all, but
yeah,
just a real monster series on Embiid, particularly in these last couple games with Rob Williams slaying again. There are points in this series where he looked like he was in trouble against the pick and roll at times, especially when Brogdon was working out with him. But when it came to elimination time, he stepped up. And even though the 3-point shot was not there most of the series, like everything about his defense was.
Yeah, and he did make what it seemed like a pretty big three at the end of the first quarter when it was
the
lead was 9, and he makes that three off the kickout, which I thought was a 2 actually when he took it, because it sort of looked weird on the TV, and I was like, was that like a long 2? But no, it was, he got the footwork right and canned the shot that felt big at the moment, even though at the end, right, it doesn't seem like any one shot from the first quarter matters all that much. I think the stat that I've seen kicking around was that Embiid was 3-for-17 when Horford was his primary defender in this game, something like that. And right, the old man just keeps he'll get mad maybe for not that he's gonna hear me saying it, but if he heard somebody say that, that might make him angry. Although when he's angry, maybe that's the key to the offense. But
what did you see his quote post game, Horford? Just I was fighting for my life.
Oh yeah, I did see that one. Yeah,
so it's just like,
well, he did a hell of a job,
right? He survived. Exactly. Well, he's alive,
and Embiid is getting absolutely destroyed, Harden even more. But the postmortem on that team and maybe on that this era of that team is pretty brutal right now.
We could do an hour on that team right now. We don't have time for that, but it's like
I give, like, Embiid is gonna get wrecked, but the problem with Embiid is that he's never healthy in the playoffs, right? So
yeah.
I look at this and say that probably would have been a 4 or 5 week injury in the regular season, and he wouldn't have even played in this series. And so to an extent, I have to give him credit for the fact that he played at all. And he did have some moments in it where he looked good. But then he had the 2 days off, and you're thinking like, oh, okay, is this going to be the moment for him? And basically no shows the game. And we can't know how he's feeling or any of that, but he's on the floor and he's never healthy when it comes to the playoffs. And in some, that's the difference between he and Tatum. And sort of where I slot them in the rankings of the league, it's like Jason's always there. One, he's a wing, and I just would rather have a two-way wing in the playoffs, like, than a center.
Right.
As people know like viscerally, but then at the beginning of the season or when you get to at some point in the regular season, you're like, well, clearly Embiid's the better player. But you're like, I would not take him over Tatum.
No.
But just in large part because he's a wing. But the other part of it is that Tatum always plays. He's always there. He is the consistent of like the league's superstars throughout his career. Is that he's, and maybe it's like everybody ages, at some point that will change, but that's the difference, is that he always is there in, you know, pretty much peak shape when the playoffs roll around. And so with Embiid, it just never seems to be, there's always seems to be something. And then to kind of no show this game, and again, he was better than Harden, who has a history.
Harden was checked out in the second quarter.
one steal at the start where it's like, oh, James Harden, you know, picking off of, but he almost did it at the beginning of last game too, where he jumped an early pass. And then I think did jump a pass in the first quarter last game after he just barely missed the first one. But it's over and over again with him when it's really the biggest games, it's not even that he has bad games. Like Tatum going 1 for 14 at least means that through three quarters, he had taken 14 shots and that he would keep playing and keep going. Harden goes 3 for 11. And like by the end of the game, he's not engaged. Like by the third quarter, he's nothing. And this is not at all the first time. It's the last season ended with the famous, like the ball didn't find me after I gave it up. And this year, I don't even know what it is. It's just crazy. And maybe he'll go off to Houston to.
Yeah, he'll go enjoy some. I mean, he's going to have to listen to Ime yell at him.
Vegas and whatever else. And yeah, Ime with Harden and Jalen Green. And I'm sure they'll have a grand old time down there. But
Ime, what a mistake, by the way, to take that job now when you look at the jobs that are open.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if any of those jobs would go to him, considering that the questions that people would have to answer and the fact that there's some other really good coaches who are available now who may be first in the running. And you probably just have to take the job that's offered to you when you left the last job under the circumstances that there were. But that's kind of not here nor there. And I don't know what Harden's going to do. I don't really care. Like, I don't fear the 76ers. I don't fear the 76ers when Embiid is healthy. But also, how would we ever know? Because, like, again, we don't ever seem to get there. The fact that they made this a 7-game series is a little bit of a credit to them, I guess. There are players on the team that I do like, but they just, you know, as people are saying, like the Sacramento Kings have been to the conference finals more recently than the 76ers. The Minnesota Timberwolves have been to the conference finals more recently than the 76ers. They're 10 years into this sort of era, 9 years since drafting Embiid, and they lose in the second round. With all these questions every year, so now we can move on and look to a team that is the opposite, that continually post LeBron era seems to always get to overachieve in the playoffs with Spo and Jimmy Butler and everybody else. And you guys all get to make your flights to Miami that you thought you weren't going to get after the
dreams do come true. Even though now it's going to be 90 degrees, 90 degrees and humid now, so it's going to be no thanks. Don't want it in May, but it is what it is. It's funny now. I'm looking at the Heat here. We'll do a full preview pod before Wednesday, but we'll spend 5 minutes on this series here right now. I'm looking at their playoff game, you know, roster here, and I'm like, oh wow, they have 8 guys averaging in double figures, and then you look at the list, and it's like Oladipo out for the season, Hero also out for, I assume, this series. I bet he can come back in the finals to be back, but still, 6 players scoring in double figures. And you look at some of the names on this list: Caleb Martin, Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, Kyle Lowry off the bench. They're still starting Kevin Love. It's going to be a really interesting. I mean, I guess the tactical thing is you have a more proven shooter, obviously, in Kevin Love starting for the double big standpoint from the Celtics. But it would be shocking for them to go away from that now. Despite that potential variable involved, where Rob is going to have to guard the perimeter more in this series.
I don't even know who their 5 are right now.
I believe it's starter Jimmy, Bam, Vincent,
Love, and Strus, right?
And Strus. Yeah. I think that's
going to say it's formidable. Not Caleb Martin, is it? Because if it's Martin, then that's right.
Big trouble. Yes, I think Caleb.
I don't know. That's a whole. Yeah, I haven't thought about it at all. There's a whole conversation we had there. Derek White, who was a little bit jumped by Brogdon in this series, I think has a bigger role to play in that. But, you know, you can imagine a lot of other players who get it for the adaptation again. But yeah, there's plenty of time to deal with that, especially because the series doesn't even start for a couple of days. Today it's reveling in the demolition of that we all, it was, yeah, right. It's been a stressful few weeks for anybody who builds a lot of their personality around a sports team. the idea of losing to your rival at an earlier spot than you thought you would go out is never feels good. But like I said, they're a much tougher out when it really comes down to it, and they showed it again. 7 guys, 2 games in a row, too, right? Like they really cut down and really just focused on like, this is how we're going to get there. And they did. We haven't even, I don't even know that. I don't have really anything to talk about. Last game, it was a lot of talk about the guards. This game, not a whole lot to be said. I don't think they all sort of played their part. But I don't know. It was a game for the wings and the bigs tonight, which like a little bit of flip the script from.
They did. They took him home from there. But all right. Make sure you're following Ryan on Twitter at Danger Cart. East finals start on Wednesday. Celtics will get 2 days off before hosting things this time in game one. And I don't know, Ryan, they're pretty, I think they're heavy title favorites right now.
Not title favorites. They're certainly Eastern Conference title.
They're title Denver favorites. They're championship. I mean, by Vegas odds, not heavy, but like,
The problem is the other two teams both get knocked by the fact that they play each other, like Denver and LA, because they have to go through the other one.
Right. That knocks the odds
so that their odds get knocked down. They're heavy favorites against Miami. I fully expect them to lose game one, 119 to 117 in some fashion where we're like, how did that possibly happen? Just because it's the way it is. But they should, you know, having not looked too again, not too close to me. Like if they lose this series, it will be a major missed opportunity. But yeah, like I said, today I'm still having the high of that third quarter and of Jason Tatum doing something that we will never forget as Celtics fans, and continuing to exert our dominance over the Philadelphia 76ers. So it was a fun day for that, and we can think about all the rest tomorrow
in due time. That was a special one. Special one for Tatum, special one for this team getting these wins in game seven year after year at this point. And now we turn the page, but for now it's watch what goes down in Philly in the next couple of days and what the Celtics have up their sleeve as they play the Heat for the third time in the Eastern Conference Finals in the past 4 years, which is absolutely nuts. But that's where we're at, and that's what we'll bring to you guys next time out here on the Winning Place Pod.